Moncrief on News Talk.
It is indeed time for parenting. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. 087 1400 106. Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon,
Joanna. Afternoon, Sean.
First question. Our baby has recently started wobbling or walking. This has set my wife off on a baby-proofing spree around the house. She's obsessed with rounding every corner and filling every gap. But my approach is more laissez-faire because I feel that the child needs to be able to make mistakes and learn from them. What is the best approach for us to take baby proofing? Do we even need to bother with it at all? Now that broken arm will learn you.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking. I mean, usually I'm the one who is saying children need to make mistakes so they can learn. But I don't think this is the area that we practice that in.
No.
You know, she doesn't yet have balance. She's at the perfect height for the edge of a table and all of those things. And so I just don't think this is the teach moment that you imagine it's going to be. It's funny, like, because I remember, Sean, when I was doing this process myself and I went all out. Like, I bought all the spongy, stick-on adhesive things and spent the whole evening decking out the whole house, delighted with myself, going, I have now future-proofed this house from accident. And the next morning, my wobbly toddler came down and thought, oh, how fun, peeled everything off and was like, thank you so much for these nice playthings.
Challenge accepted.
And I went back to putting hair bobbins onto press doors to keep them closed, you know, twisting hair bobbins around, and going very old school on it, because all of my fancy stuff didn't last, like, not one morning in the house. So if you've got a creative, you know, genius on your hands like that, who's just going to say, have fun and peel everything off, of course don't do that. But basic things like stair gates, yes. I mean, hair bobbins on presses, particularly the presses that have the kitchen supplies in them, because it's just going to, that teach moment will land you in a GP surgery or the children's hospital. You know, any dangerous chemicals locked away, thinking now of the height and the curiosity of a toddler. That's the mind frame you have to view your house through now, and just keeping things out of reach, breakables, all of that type of stuff, and be really mindful of slippy surfaces because they're at that wobbly stage. Bare feet, of course, are great for them to be walking in, but just be mindful that maybe some sponge squares, hair, the basics, I would say yes. So I think yes, baby proof the house, to use that, or house proof.
As far as you can.
As much as you can. But there's no formula that is going to ensure she never has a bump. And when she does, that you don't overreact. So there's a bit of me saying, you're both right. Don't be totally laissez-faire about this, but just come in a little bit. You're not going to be able to make sure she never has a bump or a bruise. And when you do, you're just going to pick her up and she will learn from that, because children learn from falling down and getting back up. But yes, be sensible.
Yeah, it's funny when you say that, like, because I for years I had a habit of always putting my hand on the edge of a table.
Yeah.
Just in case.
It lingers with
you. Like, I've been in restaurants, you know, but it's not my child, but I have the hand on the edge of the table, you know, but the head is just going to go straight into it.
It could be such a nasty bump,
edge
of a table and then a child's eye.
Nearly decapitated themselves.
Absolutely. So it's not a casual thing. I do get both parents' perspective on that, but do some proofing.
I get on really well with my wife's parents. They're actually wonderful people. However, they don't have much of a relationship with our two boys, who are 6 and 8. My wife is their fourth and youngest child, so they have 15 grandchildren in total, with ours being the youngest by a few years. It strikes me that they're just over the whole grandchildren thing. They never babysit our kids or come to visit them much, more than they have to. At the other end, our boys, perhaps unsurprisingly, have more or less no interest in visiting them or getting to know them. The problem I have with this is that I know they will likely regret not getting to know their grandparents. Both myself and my wife have talked about how we wish we had more time with our grandparents, but most of them died when we were quite young. And here are my kids, with both of their maternal grandparents alive and well, and they barely know them. How do I facilitate a better relationship between my parents-in-law and my kids?
And, isn't it interesting? Like, there's something in this. First of all, like, your children might grow up to regret not having a relationship, but also, Sean, they might not have that experience, because how do you miss what you didn't have? And I do think when this parent is talking about, you know, grandparents, you're saying, don't show much interest in your children, and therefore your children aren't showing much interest back, because, of course, a relationship is based on reciprocal connection.
Yeah.
So they're not going to have that if they're not interested in people who aren't showing them interest. This does not mean these grandparents don't love their grandkids, by the way.
Mm.
It's just the way of relating. So I would be looking at how do you build connection, but in a way that, and you have to be really authentic about this, that what you want is the connection with grandparents. You're not asking them for anything.
Yeah.
And that's important. Like, that you don't say the best way now for you to have a relationship with your grandkids is keep them for the weekend.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because that then is quite an agenda-driven relationship. And sure, that would be lovely, by the way. And, you know, you could certainly ask them once in a while, would you sit with the boys while we pop out to dinner? I think that's no harm. And you can always ask that.
Mm.
But I'm wondering if you'd be better off approaching this from the having a family, you know, the Sunday dinner and inviting grandparents over.
Over, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't have to be weekly, fortnightly. Mm. They come over, they have dinners, they stay a few hours. You can chat about the kids, what they're up to, show granny this, show granddad that, you know, different bits and bobs. Making sure you invite them to things like sports games or drama performances that you buy. You know, when everyone has to go to the end of term show.
Of course they do, yes. Yeah. That was extremely enjoyable.
Everyone loves it. So they're definitely, you know, get the tickets for that. But just making sure that you are updating them, you know, without expectation that they whoop and ooh and ah back to you, that you say, oh, just letting you know so-and-so scored a goal or this happened, or sharing little videos, little nuggets, that you're proactively keeping that door open, but going, we want you in here. We want you part of their lives. And I think, Sean, as well, and I tend to approach things, just name it, be quite open about it. And this does depend on the quality of the relationship between, you know, this woman and her parents, but just naming it to them.
Yeah.
Not in a critical or confrontational way, but literally saying openly and honestly, I'd love for my boys to know you better and to have a really good relationship with you. Is that something you're open to? Because here's some ideas I have, and you might have ideas too.
Yeah. Though I'm guessing from, like, 15 grandchildren, and the mother of these two boys is the youngest of the four kids. They're probably of an age, and you know, when
possible.
She says they're over the whole grandparent thing, they're probably knackered.
Absolutely, and I do think that that's a part of this as well, and that's why I'm being really clear that you want the relationship, but it's not with an expectation that they do anything.
Yeah.
You know, that they're guests. And it's not that you're going to them for dinner. You're inviting them to you for dinner. You know, that you invite them to events your children are doing, could be at the school or whatever, but you bring them, you know, and that you share proactively those nuggets of little videos of football games that they might not be able to go and stand at the sideline for, but they might still want to be informed and be a part of and to have that shared joy with you. But I think it is okay to say to your parents, look, I'd love for them to know you a bit better. What works best for you? How can we work this out?
Yeah, I know somebody whose grandmother called everyone a girl just because she couldn't remember any of the names.
And I mean, how lovely is that? Because everyone goes, oh, my granny always called me, and they all have the same
then
story.
Then they were about 9 or 10, they saw straight through it. I have three boys who are 6, 9, and 10. Wow. As with any family full of boys, it's busy and boisterous. It's a busy and boisterous household. My husband commutes, and because his job is an hour away, I end up doing the brunt of the daily parenting. The problem is that my boys act up around me, and I'm always the one trying to discipline them, whereas my husband gets down to swan in before bedtime. My younger one is really testing my temper these days. He's had two meltdowns just in the last week when I've asked him to put his seatbelt on, and he throws a strop if I rush him out of the house so that we make school on time. I'm exhausted and my nerves are fraying while my husband sees a much happier version of our children. I'm sick of being the bad cop. I'd appreciate any advice on how I can be a kinder, more patient parent. I know these years are going by fast. I don't know if this is parenting or marriage counselling.
There's a bit of both in this, actually. And I think the years are going by fast, but I imagine this parent's days are going by very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
And those two truths can coexist, because I think the crux of this question is in the statement at the very beginning. You know, I end up doing the brunt of the daily parenting and my husband gets to swan in for bedtime. The language is very particular there. And I just think you, this parent sounds exhausted, mm-hmm. like worn out. 6, 9 and 10, like that's full on.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
that is really full on. This is a parent who is likely drained, depleted, tired. You choose any word of your choosing and it all says the same thing. But that the problem with that, Sean, is that if you don't take action to do something about those feelings, they can manifest into yeah. resentment.
Mm.
And then, yes, now we're talking about a different conversation for sure. I think this is true for all parents, by the way, but particularly in a parenting situation where one of you is doing the heavy lifting Monday through Friday in all of the kind of waking hours, that you need time, not just need time. I really want to emphasize you deserve time. That is for yourself away from the kids.
Yeah.
So that you can actually be that kinder, more patient parent you're aspiring to be. You know, I just think tag dad in for those bedtimes when he swans in. Tag him in and say, you're it. And you stay down and have that cup of tea, a snack, and watch an episode of whatever show you're into or read your book and let him do the bedtime
yeah.
of the evening.
Yeah.
You're done. You're off shift. And at the weekend, that dad can do some of that heavy lifting or the brunt of the parenting, as it's put here, and that you take and prioritize time, space and activities for yourself. Because I think if this parent doesn't start taking something back in, they're not going to have anything to put back out. And these are three busy, active boys at that stage of development who are go, 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 very physical, very active. And she needs eyes on and to be on all the time. You can only do that if you're resourcing yourself in the downtime to keep doing it.
Mm.
And it might be about looking at, you know, how do you balance out the mental load of parenting between you when one of you is there more than the other?
Yeah. And the house must be trashed as well with three boys.
I mean,
wow. Yeah, as long as he, the husband, I mean, kind of sees this and if because he's coming home and, you know, every child is washed and they're asleep and he's going, I don't see what the problem is because
but
he hasn't been there.
His partner cranky and tired and complaining. And if he doesn't have context for that, it'd be very easy to personalize.
Yeah,
why are you never happy when I come in?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. My daughter will be going into secondary school this year and we agreed that for her 12th birthday, we would get her a phone, which is coming up. To be honest, it feels like she's one of the last ones in our friend group to get one anyway and we can't resist much longer. I've heard horror stories of teenagers sending inappropriate photos and messages on Snapchat and I'm terrified. I think she's a sensible child, but also one that could be easily influenced by the cool kids. Where do I even start when it comes to speaking to her about being very careful about who she speaks to on the apps and what she does on her phone? She's so excited by the thought of having one that I think she can't really see the potential dangers. She's our oldest and we haven't had a time, we haven't navigated this territory before.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know where this kind of belief has come in that, you know, now that they're going to secondary school, they need the phone. Like this is a very modern parenting thing. You know, they don't need a phone, but you may well be under immense pester pressure that they have a phone, particularly when it's they're the last one to get it and all of that. Phone-free primary schools is generally the best way to go. You still have a few months. You don't have, I mean, you've said she can have it. You've told her this and she's anticipating it. The horror stories, you know, again, it's that language of fear. You need to get informed is what you do before you put that phone into her hand. Because I'm thinking, like, does getting a phone automatically mean, or does it have to mean, getting access to social media? I don't think so.
No, indeed not.
And I would be very clear about that with her, that she has the phone and there's some messaging apps on it for her to communicate with friends or whatever, but that there is no social media at this stage because she's just turning 12.
Mm.
She's actually too young for social media.
Yeah, I don't know what the age limit is on Snapchat.
I think it's 13.
Is it? Right, okay.
I stand to be corrected on that.
And no doubt people will be correcting us.
Please do. But CyberSafe Ireland, CyberSafe Kids, they have great resources on this and talking you through all of the messages. Many social media apps have moved their age to 16 and with good reason.
Yeah.
I know there's a move with some of them child versions. But, you know, be very mindful and open about this, that, you know, the most sensible child out there is going to be influenced, not because they're easily influenced by cool kids, but because there is a literal world of influencing.
Yes, going
on. That social media exists for and is sustained by. So I'd suggest a very slow, gradual ease into this. And that might be that ahead of getting her own phone, you now start giving her access for some period of time to your device under your supervision. And then you get to see what effect does it have on her?
Yeah.
How easy is it for her to hand it back to you when you say time is up? All of those kinds of things. Whatever handset you're buying her, do your research, go to one of the shops, get talked through it. It doesn't have to be this like state of the art, does everything. It really shouldn't be for a first phone, no more than you don't buy the sports car as your first car. Like, you know, give something that's entry level that she's going to learn on and grow with. I think as well as that, agree the terms of use for the phone now, before she has it in her hands, because now she'll agree.
Yes.
You'll get full agreement to anything. Yeah. But it's also that you're very clear. You might even want to write it out and you all sign it and you make it quite official feeling. But you're saying things like, where are the phone-free zones in the house? No phones in bedrooms, no phones at the table. That goes for everyone, not just her, by the way. That access to Wi-Fi and a phone is a privilege, not an entitlement. And it can be lost just as much as it is gained.
Mm.
And that there are consequences for misuse of that phone and what constitutes misuse. You know, that she breaks the rules or that she's sending inappropriate messages. And on that, be clear with her that she will likely see or receive messages or content that could be confusing or upsetting, and she will never be in trouble for receiving that, and she should bring it to you when that happens, that she won't be in trouble. She didn't send it, she didn't forward it to anyone. Bring it to you and you will look into it and deal with it for her. And you have that very serious chat to emphasize the serious responsibility of having the phone. And if any of that is too much for her, then she's not ready to have this piece of technology. Just keep the communication around it open. Let her know that you will be checking the phone, that there is limited privacy on this, that, you know, you're providing it, you will be checking it, you'll have access to it, and emphasizing no phones in the bedrooms, but also phone or whatever use stops at a certain time of the day. That's arbitrary. You pick the time that suits your family. But I just think putting those rules in place now and holding to them. I think we're great at putting rules in place.
Yes, yeah. And actually, the writing it out is a very good idea.
And then you have it there to pull back. Do you remember agreeing to this?
Yeah.
But be very clear that you've said she can have a phone. You have not agreed to Snapchat or social media.
Yeah. And best of luck with that. Joanna, thanks a million as ever.
Thank you.
Joanna Fortune there.
Moncrief. Weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.